Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Brian Alexander. He is the author of The God Matrix. Brian claims to have been non-religious and non-spiritual, but one day as he sat down to meditate and ask for guidance, it was just really loud and clear that part of his spiritual awakening at that time, he was to also conceptualize a book. We will be talking a little bit more about this during the next half hour, so stay tuned. But first, a little bit about him. Brian is currently developing a program he calls Path to Spiritual Enlightenment Invocation, and this is going to help others experience the same type of spiritual awakening that has changed his own life. Brian is a master trainer in neurolinguistics and a certified Reiki master and Qigong instructor. He holds 7th degree black belt in karate with 37 years of training experience. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Irene.
Well, I'm just really thrilled to be talking to you because this is one of my favorite topics, and I just want the listeners to know that this is going to be an exciting conversation and for them to just really stay on because we're going to go places that we don't know where we're going. So, first of all, I just wanted to kind of get you to tell us a little bit about what this book is about, and then we're going to talk about stuff. So, just give me a little lowdown on what The God Matrix is really about.
Well, The God Matrix is a spiritual thriller, and I call it that. It's in the same genre that the Celestine Prophecies was in. It has spiritual principles that are the basis of the book, but it's wrapped up in a thriller type of plot. We have government conspiracies, possibly alien abductions, and a lot of other things happening within the book, some romance, some mystery. So it all comes together to create the book, The God Matrix.
Well, that sounds great. And interesting, too, because from what I understand, how this book came about was really you had a personal spiritual awakening. And so I want to know about the spiritual awakening. Are you willing to talk about it?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It started, well, actually, it was in 2001. Now, I remember exactly when it was. And in my own personal life, I was having a bit of a down experience, and I did something I'd never done before. And in order to help you to understand this, prior to this point in time, I was non-spiritual person, or at least I considered myself to be non-spiritual and non-religious. And so I did something I'd never done, and that was I said a prayer.
What?
And I just asked for a little bit of help, a little bit of guidance. And then I went to my computer a little later. I was just sitting there wasting time playing some solitaire, and it hit me. It was like something came through me. I heard a message being given to me. There's actually 3 messages, and one of them was to write this book. And another one was some of the understanding of the concepts of the book. So it took me a while to get to it, but I kept hearing inside, write the book. So I finally did. I sat down, and I just dove into it.
Wow. So you're telling me that you were non-religious, non-spiritual, but you said a prayer. Who did you say the prayer to?
Well, I didn't know, but it was sort of like, if there's anybody out there listening, please listen.
Interesting.
And when it washed through me, it was not my voice. It had come from outside of me. And my friends said to me that after seeing me right after that, that I looked completely different.
Wow.
I had become a softer type of person. I lost some of the edge. The weekend after that, I felt like a completely different person. I felt like I was walking on a cloud, you might say. It completely changed my existence.
And is that complete change of existence still exist now?
Well,
what's happening now?
Well, I still have a much greater understanding of spirituality than I did before. Although I'd been studying Qigong for a great many years, I didn't really understand it from the energy, you might say, spiritual side. And from there, I really opened up to more of the spirituality, studying energy healing, Reiki, Qigong, other types of energy work, and getting more involved in that side of things.
Oh, so what you're telling me then is after the shift happened, you had your spiritual awakening, is when you became interested in becoming a Reiki master and doing energy healing. So this is not something you were doing before then.
I was doing it to a very limited extent before then. I didn't totally accept it. I began to accept it more. Well, after the spiritual awakening, I mean, I totally opened to it.
Uh-huh.
And I began to see the world differently.
In what way? How does it look like to you now as compared to what it was, let's say, 10 years ago before the spiritual awakening?
Well, that's a difficult question. To take myself back 10 years and to look at the world at that time, I was looking at things from, you might say, more of a business perspective. Now I look at more from a human perspective.
Uh-huh.
I'm more interested in the human condition and what we need to do in order to improve our life.
So do you feel that over these 10 years after your initial spiritual awakening that you've had continued awakening and taking yourself to higher levels of consciousness and just being more aware on another realm?
Well, I won't say it's been an easy journey.
Uh-huh.
There's certainly been ups and downs through this last period of time, but, you know, I have a number of friends who are, you know, consider themselves very spiritual, and they come to me for advice and help and guidance.
Uh-huh.
And I find that I'm getting more involved in that.
And I understand that you are also developing a program called Path to Spiritual Enlightenment Invocation, and this is also sort of to help others through what you had gone through.
After I had my spiritual awakening, I found myself saying, that was such an amazing experience. How can I help other people have a similar experience?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I started asking the question, and then the answers started coming to me.
Uh-huh.
And it was based on stuff that I'd been doing and teaching, plus based on information I'd picked up through other spiritual practices, through yoga, through a number of different things. And it all started coming together as to how I could put that together into one course, one program.
Uh-huh.
Now, that won't guarantee anybody's going to have the kind of spiritual experience I had, but the idea is that it will help to remove blocks and open people up to a higher spiritual awareness.
Well, we certainly, each one of us has our own experience, don't we? So, you know, I'm glad you had mentioned that because we can't really, you know, what your spiritual awakening was, it's certainly different from mine. And
The thing about spirituality is it's personal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And everybody's experience is going to be different, unique to them.
Yeah.
The purpose of my course isn't to put people into one box and say, this is the way it has to be. It's simply to help them remove their own blocks and open themselves up more to their own personal spirituality.
So where do you think, I'm just going to go back to that initial voice that came to you, and now that you're, you know, that's 10 years later and you've studied a lot more and you've realized and a lot of changes have occurred, where do you really think that initial voice came from?
That's a question I've asked myself a few times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really can't say other than I know that it was outside of myself.
Uh-huh.
I mean, some people would turn around and say, well, they spoke to God.
Uh-huh.
I think God is too huge an entity to speak to any individual person, but through other aspects. I mean, in the book, I talk about the universe being alive,
uh-huh,
the living energies of the universe. And this is one of the messages that came to me, one of my three messages, was to understand about the living energies of the universe. I call it the living universe. So we are all a manifestation of that living universe in the same way that our body is comprised of 70 trillion cells. Every one of those cells is alive.
Mm-hmm.
And probably if we were to ask those cells what they thought God looked like, they'd say, well, they think that we were God, but we look like a giant cell.
Yeah.
In reality, we are made up of that community in the same way that the universe is made up of all of the life,
mm-hmm,
that comes from, just from us and from all other life in the universe.
I was in a program one time, and there were 32 of us. And the question was, describe God, or what is God? You know, give the definition. And what was interesting is that majority of the 32 people gave a different definition. So there you go. You know, how do we explain it? Each one of us has our own concept.
And that's true. And I think that while we each have our own concept, there's going to be some similarities between understandings. Although our religions want us to think of God as being a man, essentially, they all refer to him. But I think in if you ask people who truly have spiritual experiences, they remove the masculinity, the humanity from God, and it becomes a much greater life force.
A matrix, really.
A matrix.
Yes, a matrix. So in the God Matrix, you say that you you talk about government conspiracies. And I want to talk about that with you. There's a lot of conspiracies going on right now, and it just kind of makes me smile because, you know, a lot of people have their own opinions, and yet a lot of them aren't founded. So let's talk about the government conspiracies that go on in your book, The God Matrix.
Well, the government conspiracies, perhaps the wrong word to use. Maybe I should say a military experience or military experiment on people. We think of the military and the government as being part and parcel of the same thing many times. And what's going on with that is that a group of very powerful individuals notice that there's something happening around the world. And so they begin their own research and to find out what's happening and at the same time to obfuscate some of the knowledge that's out there. In other words, they want to control the information. And they don't appreciate John Phoenix, who is the hero, I guess you could say, of our story, meddling in their affairs and trying to find out what's going on.
So do you think that's going on right now in reality?
In reality, the government has a belief that they have the right to knowledge that we as the average citizen shouldn't have. And they believe that they should control what we know and understand. Certainly that's going on. I mean, you just have to look at any particular piece of information that you want, you know, the right to information, the right to freedom, and you can only get so much information out of the government. There's a lot of documents that are restricted we can't see. Who knows what went on with many of the different pieces of history that we look back at. We're not allowed to know. And so we as the average people are kept in the dark and led by the government. But what we have to realize is that government itself is just people, just other people. But they've put themselves above the average person and said, we have the right to know, you don't.
It'll be interesting where that all ends up eventually. And I think as people are realizing what is being kept away from them, you know, they're not happy. We're not happy. And so I just kind of wonder if over the next decade or so, there's going to be a shift and we will have more knowledge. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
There is a shift occurring. And you'll find that a lot of the different spiritualists are predicting something's going to be happening in the next year or so that's going to alter the way we all interact with each other. And everything from the end of the Earth, which has been predicted so many different times, to a change to for everybody to start becoming more spiritual.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, who knows what really is going to happen? We don't know. I do know that after I had my own personal spiritual awakening, I got a sense that just came to me that coming up about this time, something is going to happen. But what's going to happen, I don't know.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author Brian Sander. He is the writer of The God Matrix. And hey, as if you've heard so far, we are delving into some really interesting concepts. So stay tuned because there's going to be more. You can also check Brian out on his website, thegodmatrix.com. Do you think that 2012 may be the shift, that may be the vortex of the shift? A lot of theorists feel that it will be.
I suspect that they're right. Something is going to be happening in the next year. It may not be as dramatic as a lot of people think. The shift might be a little more subtle, but certainly there is going to be a shift occurring. But you see, there's a lot of strong forces out there that don't want any kind of shift. They would like things to stay pretty much as they are, especially some of the big religious forces. They very much want things to maintain the status quo. And so they're fighting against any kind of spiritual shift.
But as we both know, you know, humans cannot control spirituality. I mean, you know, it's just going to happen the way it's going to happen.
Well, that's true. We have a lot less control than we like to think we do.
Yeah, yeah.
As a race, we tend to be fairly arrogant.
So I'm looking forward to 2012 to see really what's going to happen and, you know, what predictions are correct and what aren't. In fact, you just sent me something the other day saying that actually, I think it was May, it's a day that I'm supposed to be in Michigan doing a workshop. I think it was May 26th that the world is going to come to an end. So, you know, there we go. As you say, they've been predicting the end of the world for a long, long time, so nothing's happened.
Yes. I don't think the world's going to come to an end, per se, but certainly there's going to be an end to some things. If we look at history, there's been many endings throughout time, and many races, you know, societies have built up very strong and then ended, and we're going to see more of that. The question is, who's going to win the war?
Well, exactly. I mean, there's balance. There has to be, you know, if there's a beginning, there has to be an end. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just the way it is. So as one door closes, another one opens. And so, you know, there's a lot of little adages that can be used to for that. So in your book, you also talk about alien abductions. And that's something that's, you know, in our society every so often comes up and goes away. And government poo-poos it or doesn't let us know about it. And yet there's a lot of people that claim that they have been abducted by aliens and had all these experiences, and so I know that you bring that into your book. On a personal level, tell me, do you believe in aliens?
Our universe is 156 billion light years across. That's a number that's beyond the ability of the human mind to conceive. We have, what, 300 million stars in our galaxy. There's 500 billion galaxies, or some with up to a trillion stars. So to think that in this entire universe, we are the only life form is, again, a rather arrogant assumption. And when you look around this planet itself, we're not the only life form. I mean, there's millions and millions of life forms on this planet, and plants, trees, birds, insects, and so on. So we might be the dominant one on this particular planet, but that doesn't mean that there isn't other life out in this massive universe. I mean, it would be, to me, an almost impossible thought to think that we are the only life that exists in this universe. Now, whether these other life forms are coming here to visit us, anybody that can come here to visit us would think of us in the same way we would think of Neanderthals.
It's impossible, isn't it?
Sure, we're rather primitive to somebody that has the ability to travel, you know, hundreds of millions of light years across the galaxy.
Well, there's also a belief that these people or these aliens that come from other planets or other galaxies also exist on Earth, but in another dimension. And I am asking you if you've done any research or have any knowledge or interest in knowing anything about that.
I have been thinking about that lately.
Mm-hmm.
We perceive things through a very limited sense of set of senses. So our perception's very small. We deal with the electromagnetic spectrum, and we're relatively familiar with that. But that's not necessarily the only energy spectrum out there. That's just the only one that we're aware of at this time. So could other life forms exist? Most certainly they could. In the same way that in science, nothing exists until they finally discover it. And then suddenly it's existed all along. And so we haven't discovered it yet, scientifically speaking, so we decide that it doesn't exist. Yeah. Well, one of these days, somebody is going to discover something new, and it will. One of the things I talk about in my book is quantum communicators. And we understand that what's called an electron pair, a bonded pair, if you were to flip one of those electrons, the other one would flip instantly, no matter where it is in the universe. There's instantaneous communication. What is the energy spectrum that allows these two electrons to communicate with each other instantly across the vastness of the universe? So now we're talking about traveling at instantaneous speeds from one point to another. That's a whole different energy spectrum. We don't understand it. We can't see it. We can't measure it. So from a scientific perspective, it doesn't exist, but it's there. So what else is there that we at this point can't see?
Exactly. You know, as you are in the room that you're in, as you look around, we can only see, I'm only here with my two dogs. I can see them as living and, of course, the plants and everything else. But, you know, then I sometimes wonder, it's like, okay, if I shifted to another dimension, if I was able to do that, what is all existing in the same time and space?
And even on a bringing it closer to home, you talked about your plants. And if you have developed an affinity for your plants, they actually respond to you. And they've discovered that they can hook up, like similar to a lie detector, onto the leaves of the plants. And if you have an experience, the plant will register that.
Yeah.
How does that work? How can you be several hundred miles away and have a startling experience and have your plant measure that?
Yeah.
So there's something going on. There is a communication spectrum out there that scientifically we're not aware of. But most people who are open spiritually, anybody who's done any energy healing or energy work, understands that it's there and uses it.
I agree. And let's talk about energy healing. You are a Reiki master, which I know that takes you through several, I believe, three levels of training, and you were inducted as a master. And so just explain to our listening audience a little bit about being a Reiki master so that for those that don't know what it is, we'll understand and we'll talk about energy healing.
Well, Reiki is one of the forms of energy healing. There are many different types of energy healing out there, and one of the things I've discovered is that the people who do different types of energy healing happen to think that theirs is the right one or the best one. But they're really all the same. They're all identical. Whether you put the word Reiki under it or Qigong or any of the other types of energy work that are fairly popular, we're really all working with the energy body. We're used to a physical body. Everybody knows about the physical body, and we understand that there's an emotional body, but there's also an energy body around us that has been measured through Kirlian photography and other forms of measurement, and we can interact with this energy body. It is a natural thing for all of us. If you were to bang your shin or your elbow or something, the first thing you do is you grab it with your hand automatically. And what you're doing is infusing it with healing energy. When a young child falls and hurts itself, it goes running to mommy because it knows mommy's energy is much better. Of course, mommy kisses it instead, but maybe there's a lot of healing in mommy's saliva too. But we do this naturally without even thinking about it. We automatically begin to heal ourselves using our energy. And some people are much better at it than others. Everybody can do it. Every living person has an energy field, and we all have the ability to utilize this energy field. but not everybody does. And of course, like any other discipline, there are some people who are more natural at it and have the ability to do an even exert a greater amount of energy in the healing. So while everybody can learn it, there are some people who can become true masters at it. Most people can become adept at it with a little bit of practice. Reiki is just one of, as I said before, one of the many different types of energy healing. One of the interesting things about Reiki as opposed to some of the others is that it has a very set methodology of learning and developing. So it enables people who are not familiar with energy healing a way to get involved in it and follow the basic principles. So I look at it as essentially giving people permission to use the energy that's already there within them.
So as a healer yourself using the Reiki method, explain to our audience how you facilitate the healing, because you were just talking that, you know, everybody can, you know, if you bruise yourself or something, you put your hand on it, and it, that's energy healing. But you as a facilitator.
You know, any time somebody comes and puts their hand on you, there's a sensation involved with that. And it feels nice. It's comfortable to have somebody put their hands on you. Aside from the skin-to-skin touching, one of the things about Reiki quite often is there is no touching, but there can be. And there's something nice about that touch. Now, when we extend that just a little bit more, and we, as I said before, we're all energy beings, and we all have an energy body around us, then when I put my hands on somebody, I'm doing it from the perspective of using this energy. In Chinese saying, yi leads qi, mind leads energy. So where we focus the intent of our energy, that's where it's going to flow. Reiki is the idea of using your hands, placing them over the body, around the body, and to enhance energy flow into the body. And the recipient, they're going to receive this energy, and it's going to then travel to many different areas in the body, depending on where it's needed. There's been many studies, a great many studies done on this whole concept of energy healing. Dr. Larry Dosey, in his book, Reinventing Medicine, talks about the studies that were done at McGill University, where they used energy healers on mice in a control group, where they put little slices on the back of a mouse, and energy healers would hold them for a moment, and in the control group, they would just warm them up a little bit as if they were being held. And yet the mice, the energy healers were holding, all got better faster. And after 1,200 of these studies, it became pretty obvious that there's something going on when a person holds the mouse with the intent of sending healing energy to it.
Gosh, this has been really interesting, Brian. I know that our listeners are interested also in what you have had to say, and I just want to remind them that we are talking to Brian Alexander, and he is the author of The God Matrix. And if you heard, Brian is very knowledgeable on the topics that he has written in his book, and as we had talked earlier, the book The God Matrix has a variety of different things, not only the spiritual aspect, but also it's a thriller that brings in military conspiracies, alien abductions, a little romance, and a little bit of mystery. So our reviewer, Paige Lovett, really loved it. She really liked it, so I really encourage the listeners to check it out. It's Brian Alexander's book, The God Matrix. Brian, thank you very much. This has been a really interesting interview, and tell our listening audience your website address.
Well, they can see the book right at thegodmatrix.com.
There you go. How simple is that? The title of the book, thegodmatrix.com. Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.